I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX's Radiotopia, welcome to the heart . It was still the holidays, just after New Year's. There wasn't any snow. The Heart was about to launch on Radiotopia, and we had money in the bank to make radio for the first time in our radio lives. Mitra proposed that we go on what we call a business trip.
Business trip.
Business trip!
This is us. In our rental car, on our way to small town Ontario. This is us getting Tim Hortons coffee.
Oh my God, Tim Hortons!
Something that has become more important to me the longer I'm away from Canada.
I told you, man, put enough sugar in something, it'll taste good.
I didn't even get any sugar.
You didn't get sugar.
This is Mitra driving on the highway in a snowstorm.
You know, I find that I'm a good driver under pressure, like, serious circumstances.
She's never driven with snow on the road before.
I think the best advice I ever give my kids is don't let anyone else rush you. You drive at the speed you're comfortable at. There, somebody crashed. That's why they slowed down.
And this is Steffi, telling Mitra everything she needs to know about driving in a snowstorm.
And the other thing you need to remember is have you ever gone water skiing?
No.
Steffi was the reason for our trip.
I can officially say I'm the world's biggest flower girl. If a bigger flower girl comes along, I'll take her on. I can take her down. I've taken down so many flower girls. Like, these little three-year-olds come up to me, say, "You're not a flower girl." I said, "Don't push it, kid. I can so take you on. I'm six."
At 6'2", Steffi is the tallest six-year-old you'll ever meet. She likes to wear dresses, pretty ones. But she also likes to fix things. She's a certified
mechanic, right? As you're driving cars where the brakes might fail or the steering wheel's
ready for noise.
And she drives a tractor, plowing snow during the winters in Toronto.
It's actually not very much snow here, but it is icy, so I think what they want to do is get us out here, clearing it off.
Steffi sometimes goes by Stephanie or Paul.
Where does Paul stop and where does Stephanie start and where does little Stephanie start? I don't know. They're all together.
And for 23 years, she was married and had seven children with her ex-wife, Maria. They lived in a small, conservative town in Ontario. Stephanie described her life as being pretty perfect during this time. She lived in a house that she built with her bare hands on the banks of a small river, was a pillar in the community.
That's my oldest daughter. That's my second oldest daughter. That's my youngest daughter.
She had a big family who she adored.
My youngest son is in my arms there. That's me there, with a mustache.
Maria knew that Stephanie was trans and was relatively okay with it for many years.
In that house, I was a girl in my bedroom, or if the kids weren't home, Maria and I would allow Stephanie to have Stephanie time. I had my clothes, I had makeup and wigs and stuff like that.
How did you hide the things? Like, I find that, like, it's hard to hide things. And especially,
you don't have to hide it. If you have a wife, you just hang it in the closet. They assume this is mom's dress. Or what ended up happening as the kids got older, they would start taking my stuff. So, like, my youngest daughter took my purse. And it was like my favorite purse. And I said to Maria, I said, "You have to tell her. She has to give that back." She goes, "You tell her." I said, "She thinks it's yours. Like, she's not going to give it to me."
As the kids got older, Stephanie started to come out to them.
So I ended up going to Gender Journeys, and there they told me to tell all my children as soon as possible. And so I did tell all my kids, and I think at that point, our relationship started to suffer. I don't think my being trans was a problem for her, but in our community, in our church, and in her job, she felt, and in our family, she felt that my being trans was non-negotiable anymore, 23 years later. So. Yeah, so I think I'm speculating, but...
Maria asked Stephanie to leave.
And I moved out. And I tried to reestablish myself in Toronto as Stephanie.
At this point, Stephanie lost everything. Her house, her family, her community, and eventually all of her assets.
She did work very hard to isolate me. July 7th, my son got married. I wasn't invited to his wedding. My other daughter had married the year before, and I was invited to her wedding. My dad had passed away and wasn't invited. Took my car away while I was in the hospital for the first time.
She was at the psych ward in the hospital because her depression was so severe. She was unable to work because she was suffering from debilitating anxiety. She was broke and homeless. She bounced around from hospital to psych wards to homeless shelters and back.
When the bottom fell out, there was nobody throwing me a lifeline. There was nobody offering me, even in the shelter.
All she had was her dolly, Franny.
Franny's been through the shelter system with me and everything. So there was five women in my room, and two of the other girls in my room would often ask if they could borrow one of my teddy bears because they couldn't have Franny. But in our room, you could close your eyes and everything was okay. And we had our babies to play with, and everybody was dealing with loneliness, right? So then you have dolls, so you're not alone. And they're really good listeners, too. And sometimes they come up with some really good advice.
After 2 years of living in a room full of bunk beds with Franny as her only confidant, the shelter offered Stephanie an apartment in exchange for maintenance work. She finally moved into her own place. And by the next year, she was dating again. Some sex, a little romance, but nothing serious. In a sleepy suburban town called Peterborough, Ontario, live a sweet middle-aged couple who we will call Mummy and Daddy.
I'm the shy one. I'm the quieter of the two.
Daddy is in his late 60s, has a deep tan, like someone who winters in Florida, which in fact, they do. His face has these rigid lines etched in, but he doesn't look severe. Actually, he seemed a bit nervous.
I'm very fringy in many ways.
And this is Mummy, a very petite woman. She has blonde flowy hair, a great laugh, always smiling with these twinkly eyes.
I'm a naturist.
That means she likes to be naked.
Everyone likes skinny dipping, but people don't generally go further than that.
Their house could easily be my parents' house. Lots of plants and light, a TV on, passively buzzing in the background. The kitchen table had nuts, chocolates, and fruits on it. The walls covered in family photos. Mummy's kids, the grandkids, Mummy and Daddy together.
My kids know that I'm poly. I've been open about that from the start.
Mummy is a divorcee, and Daddy is a widow. They've been dating for many years, but only in the past few years have they become each other's primary partners. They moved to Peterborough a few years ago and have been exploring a polyamorous kink lifestyle.
I belong to an online service called FetLife, which is for the fetish community.
FetLife is a social networking site bringing people in the fetish community together.
I picked up on this very cute little avatar, which showed a young girl with beautiful curly hair, so sweet, with her hands clasped together, imploringly looking up to heaven. And the little caption above her head is, "Where's my fucking pony?" I burst out laughing looking at that, and I thought that's someone who's got a really good sense of humour. As well as the fact I'm very attracted to transsexuals sexually. I find that masculine body with a feminine mind to be a very appealing mix. And Steffi's profile piqued my interest on pretty much all levels. And I said, I'm going to write back to her.
It was a warm but breezy day in March that Daddy took the train down to Toronto. They met on a crowded street corner in downtown.
I think it was College and Young.
Steffi wore her black and white skater dress, Daddy in brown slacks and a golf shirt with a blazer. The attraction was instant.
He had this beautiful accent, and he was adorable, and
she had a confidence about her.
I felt so pretty, and I felt like someone could love me.
So a sense of comfort, and it makes a connection right from the get-go.
They had lunch in the front booth of an Irish pub with the sun shining in. They jokingly teased one another and flirted with the waitress. After lunch, ready for a bit more privacy, they headed to a nearby swingers club called Oasis.
Here we were, the two of us, and I was like a high school girl with her crush, and this guy really liked me, and we ended up going into a room upstairs. And we started kissing and cuddling. And at a certain point, I rolled over. I had my eyes closed because I was scared, because I didn't know if it was going to hurt. And he was like really, really gentle. He must have lubricated well, because, well, I said to him, I don't think you can get it in. And he said, Stephanie, I am in. And he took my virginity, and it didn't hurt. It felt beautiful. I felt like a woman. And like, I'm surprised. I didn't think I was going to be pregnant. Like, I was so much a girl. And I actually have an erection right now from it. So I'm just going to pull my dress down a little bit.
After the date, still having never met Mummy face-to-face, Steffi rushed home and called her.
And we talked for like 2 hours about how beautiful it was, how special he makes her feel, how special he made me feel. And like I was like, I couldn't believe it. I'm talking to his partner. I just had sex with him, and I'm Catholic. Like, we're not supposed to like each other. We're supposed to be enemies now. She's supposed to be jealous and hate me.
A date was set for Stephanie to go to Peterborough and meet Mummy.
I remember the first time I came here, I was nervous. And she looked at me, he looked at me. There was this longing. I'm pretty sure I probably had it in my eyes too. And we kissed and we cuddled and we talked. And this is what falling in love is.
The chemistry between the three of them was so strong that Stephanie became ingrained in their family almost instantly. She even has her own room at their home in Peterborough. It's pretty much the girly girl's dream room.
We're going to just come up here. It's going to be quiet, and we're going to have a play date and just not think.
Painted
just
pink with storybook characters on the wall.
Talk about what the world is like looking through those pink curtains, right?
A twin-size bed covered with stuffed animals. And there's this wardrobe where, in my wildest childhood dreams, is filled with crinoline and poofy silk dresses and glass slippers. But next to the wardrobe, there's a contractor's ladder for when Steffi is feeling handy.
I remember for a whole week in this room at a time, I forgot that I wasn't 6 years old. I thought I was a little kid. And I forgot about all my problems, and I forgot about everything that hurt. And I just played, and that's all they would let me do was play. And they would tuck me in at night, and they would read me bedtime stories till I fell asleep, and I wasn't shaking anymore, and I wasn't crying. And I had my teddy bears and my dolls. Like, my bed was full of teddy bears and dolls. Like, it was crowded. And it was the start. Like, I can't believe I'm crying now. I haven't cried since July.
Steffi first started age playing when she was in the homeless shelter. And age play, as the name suggests, is just play. Steffi is a little, meaning she likes to pretend to be a kid and play. Sometimes she'll have play dates with other littles where they might dress up and color. Age play can look like a lot of different things for a lot of different people. But for Steffi, this is time that she takes to be carefree and without responsibility. It's also a deep source of healing for her. During her time at the shelter, playing with dollies was how she coped. Steffi, Mummy, and Daddy more or less live as a threesome, with Steffi as their submissive.
The greatest pleasure of submission is not having to think for yourself. It gives you a great sense of freedom, to have that complete freedom of never having to think of anything, of never having to make decisions at all for yourself.
And then what's the fun thing about being a top, like being a dom?
That feeling of controlling another person, having another person completely and absolutely in your hands. You are in charge of the whole scenario, unless they use the safe word. Steffi is a powerful individual. She has a wonderful mind, a strong personality. So to be able to dominate this person gives a great feeling of strength.
Age play is just one part of their dom subdynamic. Having a daddy or having a girl or a boy is one of many different variations on this power play. It could be something like a master and a slave, a teacher and a student. But no matter what, these are intentional role plays with consenting adults. And with Steffi, this role play isn't always sexual, but can be sometimes.
Between me and Steph, there's a lot of nurturing that goes on. We might cuddle in bed at night sometimes before she goes to sleep. And Steph will go, Mommy, it's okay for little boys to wear dresses, right, Mommy? And that sort of thing. She's a little boy, but she's allowed to wear dresses. And she's a little girl, and she's a good little girl. You know, that sort of thing. That goes on almost all the time. Not necessarily in little girl mode. Sometimes it's in bigger girl mode. You know, as sort of like a teenager, when I'm doing her hair, for instance, you know, braiding it or curling it or whatever, and we'll have, you know, mother-daughter conversations.
She's able to relive some of the things that she was never able to do as a six-year-old. She was never, for example, when she was young, she was very, very handy. She was very helpful, and she was never thanked. To have me acknowledge and thank her and cuddle her and tell her that I love her and what a wonderful job she's done is banishing the demons of her childhood.
That first date with Daddy was a little over a year ago, and they've been going strong ever since. Steffi isn't always little either. The interactions that Caitlin and I witnessed were largely adult, but always flowed seamlessly from one dynamic to the next. When she's not being little, Steffi likes to fix things around the house. She's outfitted the basement, made it a sort of craft room, rewired the lights, and built a pantry.
It was like, you know, basements are cluttered.
Steffi is truly happy when she's at Mommy and Daddy's.
My role in this relationship is to be a little girl or a big girl or a little boy or a big boy. I've evolved to the point where I don't care if I'm male or female. I don't care if I'm Steffi or Paul. I don't care if I'm an adult or a little kid.
When you talk to Steffi, it's kind of hard to believe that she's been in a rough patch for the last few years. She is so unafraid, so at ease everywhere she goes, and has that effect on others too. She talks to strangers constantly, the gas station clerk, in the line at the bathroom, people on the street. Her outlook is so positive, and frankly, this surprised me. I had an assumption that she would fear judgment, considering how her family and community reacted all those years ago. But at 6'2", hiding isn't an option for Steffi. And she knows the people who care most about her are going to have her back. Mommy and Daddy, for the foreseeable future, are here. And that is truly a privilege. one that allows Steffi to move through the world with a grace that is totally unparalleled.
There was a street fair in Cabbage Town, and I was wearing a really pretty dress. A young girl came up to me and said, "Are you a boy or a girl?" And I turned to her and I said, "Well, that depends. Can boys be princesses?" And she goes, "Yeah." I said, "Okay, then I'm a boy."
Crying right now. Just like such a nice person, lady, man with a dress on.
In 200 meters, turn right onto Dundas Street East.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel very affected by her, just, you know, much like how everyone that meets her kind of is, it appears. Helps all our neighbors out, like, and just, like, so generous. I don't know. What about you? That's all I have to say.
I feel good.
Came to Toronto.
Yeah.
Was it worth it?
Yeah. Well, we won't actually know until we listen.
But if you were to take a guess. This story was produced with the help of so many people, including Caitlin Prest, Megan Dietrich, Maria Dunvag. Our editorial advisors were Julia Alsop, Brendan Baker, and Kelsey Paget. A special thanks to Tina Horn and Ignacio Rivera for schooling me on kink and age play. I could not have made this story without their input. Ignacio is an artist, sex educator, and activist. They came over on a rainy day and basically walked me through the politics of this story.
I'm Ignacio Rivera. Let me start that over. My name is Ignacio Rivera, and I am a trans-identified, genderqueer, two-spirit individual.
Ignacio has been working with the National Center for Transgender Equality. Links to that and so much more can be found on our website at theheartradio.org. And lastly, the biggest thanks to Stephanie and Mummy and Daddy for letting Caitlin and I sit in on their lives for a weekend and making us chicken soup for lunch. The Heart is Caitlin Prest, Samara Brieger, Jen Ng, Megan Dietrich, and me, Mitra Kaboli.
Radiotopia. From PR.